This is the August 8th, 2014 edition of WFAE Talks. This week we'll discuss Art Pope. He's leaving the McCrory administration, and the announcement almost brought the governor to tears. There are lots of surprises in the state budget that the governor finally signed this week. Among them is a big change in how the state funds enrollment growth in school districts.
Maybe the most important part of this that we lose, not only the potential of having overcrowded classes until the corrections are made, but it's the caliber of the teacher in the classroom.
And Hunger Games fans make unwelcome visits to where the movie was filmed in Burke County. We'll discuss that while also saying goodbye to our summer intern, Nick De La Canal. Hello, I'm Greg Collard, news director at WFAE, and with me is Lisa Miller, education reporter.
Yep, indeed.
And had a big little event for you last night. I guess it's big and little, it's contradictory, but
it was
we had
nice.
An event for you, a WFAE shower.
Yes, indeed.
For
that
your pending drinks. Nuptials.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep, it was very nice.
Yeah. So. Did you have fun? Did you thank everyone?
I thanked everyone a couple times.
All right.
it deserved a couple times things. Yeah. So, very nice.
So, and Ben Bradford.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I did not.
Yeah, why didn't you go last night, too?
Well, I was unfortunately working. I was writing an endless magazine article that I foolishly agreed to do.
Okay. All right.
At your advice.
At my advice? No. It was not at my advice.
Should I write this magazine article? And Greg said, yeah, I think it's a good idea. I said, okay, Greg, I trust your judgment.
I don't think it was that simple.
It's hard when radio people have to write something that's
like,
more than 500 words.
it's really different. It's been a long time since I've done it. So it's been a challenge, but it's been good. You can look out for that, by the way. I'm just going to plug that. You can look out for that in the Business North Carolina in the September issue. It'll be about drones and how they're coming to North Carolina.
All right. Very good. You've written you've reported on that a little bit.
I've done some stuff for us on that, and we'll do more on that for us. So,
and we have someone new with us this week, Nick De La Canal, our summer intern.
Hi, Greg.
Hello. Nice to have you here. And we're having, in part, you had a really good story this week on the Hunger Games, but it's also your last week here. Your last day is today.
Yeah, this is actually my last day.
Yeah, we're going to miss Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick has done, it's really been awesome. I mean, you've done how many features? So these, kind of lengthy, very sound-rich pieces. You've done, several at this point.
Yeah, several. Yeah, I'm not sure the exact number, but...
Yeah. Let's see. Things that stand out to me are the story on Narcan
that is a
drug overdose. It's a overdose reversal drug.
Mm-hmm. So if you're overdosing on an opiate, you just stick it. You don't even need a vein. Just stick it in you, and it'll bring you back to life, so to speak.
And the idea is if you distribute it to users, that more lives will be saved, and hopefully... it'll pull them out of their addiction too.
Yeah, that is the idea behind making it more available. So,
other stories on the Heritage USA, the Jim and Tammy Faye Baker property in Fort Mill. I-77 piece.
I-77, right? The newsy stuff.
The toll, the toll road controversy.
Following that for us.
And then this week, Hunger Games, where the site where the film was. You visited the site of where the Hunger Games, the first installment, was filmed in Burke County, and it was this old company town. What did they used to make there again?
They used to make cotton and fabric cotton. And stuff. And that it was a really interesting site because I myself am a big history buff. So just getting to see this old company town, which I learned all about in textbooks in school, but to actually see the site was really cool. And then on top of it, it was District 12 from the Hunger Games, which makes it exponentially cooler. So it was nice to walk around there and meet the guy who runs the place. And
it was more than that. You came in and into the newsroom and you said, "All right, I got an idea for a story." And you said, "There's it's this old historic village that we learned about in our textbooks, and it was this big thing in this blockbuster film." But there's a tension there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so the thing is, before the films came out, this was just kind of a roadside attraction. Nobody really ever went to it. But after the films came out, because of the immense popularity, it threw this town into the spotlight. And so nowadays there are, hundreds of people who come into this village a day just to walk around the property and see the place. And the problem is there's only one guy who owns and maintains the grounds, and he's 85 years old, has trouble walking.
Mows it 6 days a week.
Three hours a day,
6 days a week. He mows the grass for the whole village. And he's just been overrun with all these visitors. And the thing is, he doesn't mind most of them. Usually they'll just take pictures, you know, from the road. That's not a big deal. But then there are other kids, and understandably, and maybe they're not kids. It could be adults, too. I shouldn't discriminate. who will come in and bust out the windows, force in the doors. Apparently there was one group of kids who came in and had a party in one of the houses.
A rager,
broken all the windows, left beer cans everywhere. And apparently the next week people came in and did the same thing with like seven of the other buildings. So the poor guy who's keeping up with the grounds is just having a really tough time. With everything, and he really can't keep up because a lot of the doors are still open, the windows completely busted open.
Yes, this ghost town that he bought.
Yeah,
he doesn't live on the property, right?
No, he doesn't. He lives across the bridge, so he lives nearby, but not on the property.
But I think I mean your description is so good and your reporting is so good, but you have such a nice way with the people you interview, with that old man, for example, and.
He sent you out.
Yeah.
He said, yeah. Well, you first offered. I mean, you saw some kids, young adults walking
girls,
down the
right?
pavement. And you know, you sometimes have to have a sense of, you know, what's going to, you know, how do you tell this story? And that was, the story was unfolding right there. And you said, hey, should we go check that out? Yeah, you go. He sent you.
Let's hear that. Let's hear that segment right now.
Hi, how you guys doing? Oh, I think she may have cut herself. What'd you cut yourself on?
Glass.
The girl has a bloody ankle, likely ruining her white Chuck Taylors forever. Shepherd hands them some napkins and gently tells them to stay out of the houses. There's broken glass, rusty nails, unreliable wood floors. The teens sheepishly nod and head to their car.
So is that a common thing?
For to be in houses? Unfortunately, yes. When I'm here, I stop and tell everybody, do not enter buildings. Do not be on the grounds. The grounds have holes, groundhog holes, rock holes, and all kind of holes. And I see I've got a car on the back side over here that's not supposed to be here.
I thought it just it revealed a lot about the story and about this guy and about the whole dynamics. It was really a nice work that you did.
Yeah, it was an interesting place, and there was so much other great tape I felt like I got there too. So I mean, I feel like I could have put together a whole hour just on that village. There was a lot of really interesting things there.
How come he doesn't charge people to come in and I mean, I would think he could.
Well, he actually has struck up a deal with these two companies that run little tours of the village every weekend, The problem is, I mean, a lot of people don't bother paying it because the village is very open. There's no fences or anything. You can just park and walk around it. But he has struck up a deal with these two companies. So you can come in and shoot arrows into bays of hail and see Katniss's house and all that kind of stuff.
The production company paid him, I assume, to use this property?
Yes, they did. And actually, I wanted to ask how much, but he wouldn't tell me. He did say, though, he didn't know anything about the Hunger Games before they approached him. And had he known how much franchise would have grossed, he says he would have negotiated a little more.
He didn't really know it was a huge book before that and everything?
I don't think no, he didn't.
Hollywood taking advantage of... of someone. I can't imagine that happening.
But you don't know how much he got. I mean, he could have gotten thousands of dollars. And,
right.
We have no idea.
Well, I hope
but
he got at least thousands
more.
Of dollars.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, we don't know, how many figures it was.
But he didn't talk like he felt like he was sufficiently compensated.
Well, no. I think he did. But I think he still feels like he could have squeezed a little more out of that. Yeah. But he did say he had a great time when they were filming. He ate with the cast every single day, got to see them. Film a lot of their scenes. He actually donated one of the old buildings for one of the big explosive fire scenes at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually let them blow up one of the old houses, which was a cool scene to watch.
Well, what's next for you, Nick? I know you still have a little bit of first a little bit about you. You're from Myers. You're from Charlotte. You graduated from Myers Park High School 3 years ago.
That's right, 3 years ago.
You're a student at Emerson University. You have a little bit more to go?
And I go to Emerson College up in Boston.
Emerson College, I'm sorry, yes.
And I have one semester left. So my plan is to take next semester off, go back in the spring, and then graduate with the rest of my friends in the summer of next year.
Okay, great. Well, I'm sure we'll keep in touch. And again, it's been great having you here. You've done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't normally think of your interns coming in and doing, you know, really, you know, really contributing to the final product that's on air. But, you know, all summer you've been on it. You've been just another reporter in the newsroom, which has been great.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I'm crying.
Yeah, you're not, and that's a lie. And it's bad reporting.
Well, Nick, I know you have some other things. You have another appointment you need to get to, so we'll just let you head on out of here, and we'll see you at lunch later on this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, let's give him a standing. We're not.
You want to clap on the? Wait, and you're clapping for yourself?
No, I'm not.
To increase the amount of clapping that we have in the studio. No, I appreciate that. I think that's good.
All right. See you guys.
All right.
All right. We're in a different studio today recording this, so the Charlotte Talk studio.
Yeah, that's right. Usually we're there. It's actually, I see, it took a little longer to get set up. We needed a little bit of help producing it, but I feel like, don't you feel like it's more comfortable? We got a little more space.
It's different.
Would Nick have been able to talk about that if he was, like, sharing a mic with Lisa? Think about that.
Well, how would I?
He would have spoken into the mic.
Keep on my accolades if we had to share.
Well, there was some other big stories this week. One of them out of Raleigh, the resignation of Art Pope. He leaves next month. The governor's budget director, and of course, is often compared to he's North Carolina's version of the Koch brothers when it comes to elections and his influence in helping Republicans get control of the legislature.
Yeah, he's generally considered to be the most influential campaign donor in North Carolina. He ran the John W. Pope Foundation, which is a conservative nonprofit think tank. His family started the Civitas Institute, and he was a board member there. And that's really started, you know, with their family funds. He is a multimillionaire who owns Variety Wholesalers is the name of the company, but the stores are Roses and Super Dollar and you know, discount stores like that. So he's got a lot of money, and he is both through his institutions and privately, he is a major, major campaign donor. So his appointment as budget director was very controversial for people on the left who. Said, well, you know, he's been paying all of these people and supporting all of their candidacies, and now he gets to go over and pressure them to say, you know, what he wants them to vote on for the budget. Now, of course, we've seen that.
Well, it's a very unique role, right? As you know, someone who funds a lot of campaigns,
right, and funded the governor as well,
and who is in control.
Yeah, and I think that there's very much also sort of a. Almost like if you remember when George W. Bush came into office as president and you had Dick Cheney as the vice president, and Bush was sort of the newcomer to the office and Cheney was the experienced old hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there was the perception of a similar dynamic. And I think that, you know, McCrory himself discussed having a similar dynamic in terms of, you know, being able to rely on Pope's knowledge, because he was not only a fundraiser, but he was also a very a longtime legislator in the General Assembly, known for his sort of budget acumen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, he had, you know, even people who were critics of his were, you know, talked about him having the credentials for the job.
Yeah, it seemed like he earned some respect from some of his detractors a little bit. I mean, they might obviously disagree and don't like how what he did as in elections and some of the ads he funded, but he seemed to, as far as someone in government, he seemed to earn some respect.
Yeah, I think it depends. You know, we played a story out of WUNC where you had a Democratic lawmaker whose name escapes me at the moment, who expressed exactly that dynamic, where he said, you know, he didn't agree with any of his policies, but he thought that, yeah, he was an experienced guy, he respected him, and that, you know, and I think a lot of times with public servants in general, you know, who spend most of their time getting absolutely raked through the mud. This legislator also said, you know, he thinks he was in it for the right reasons, which you know, I think is often the case with our public officials. You know, a lot of times these are, you know, pretty tough jobs. Pope was taking a $1 salary, and you know, I mean, these guys spend, you know, if you look at our, you know, the General Assembly, right, they were working, you know, past midnight to get that to try to wrap up. You know, you see these guys work pretty hard. They, you know, they don't, you don't, you're not just doing that for, you know, for.
Well, you're very idealistic. So.
No, I mean, I think that I just think that in general, you know, we judge them rightfully so on what it is that they do. And we report on what it is that they do. I just think that in general, you think about sort of the job that these guys are signing up for. And sure, maybe, you know, there's certain, you know, type A personalities that are going to be more inclined to go put themselves up for election and get voted on and so forth. But at the same time, you think about who actually wants to get into the nitty gritty of these issues and spend all of this time there and all those kind of things. And in my personal experience, you know, having we've talked about it before on this podcast, having some time in Washington. Yeah, I think that people, you know, on both sides are usually in it for the right reasons, or at least get into it for the right reasons.
I would say that latter part. I think people do often get into it for the right reasons. I think once they get that power, that changes. And in my experience, and I have a little bit of experience too in politics. Mm-hmm. That's just my take. But you are right. There are certainly a lot of people who are sincere in what they're doing and are trying. Right. Whether you agree or disagree, are trying to do what they believe is right. But
I mean, this position was perfect for him as far as helping him further a lot of the things he's pushed for.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. in the past. Absolutely. So, I mean, it gave him a lot of power.
Gave him a lot of power to push an agenda. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, motivations mm-hmm. aside, that's absolutely what, and I think we saw that happen. You know, you look at mm-hmm. at what's happened, you see a major reduction in state government, right, over the particularly because of the budget passed last year, and then mm-hmm. this update to it, and you see, you know, a reduction in income taxes, reduction in services, which is, you know, really is the agenda.
But I mean, it's also interesting that, you know, he did have a lot of respect, especially from Republicans. Mm-hmm. But the Senate was not happy with him.
That's the other part about it, right?
Is there this idea was that a lot of push and shove between, you know, I think there was one hearing that the Senate called and they asked Art Pope to come and he didn't show up. So mm-hmm. they were trying to figure out what to do. I don't know if the proper word was censure, you know, whatever. They were trying to figure out
some way to punish him.
Yeah, some way to punish him.
Right.
I mean, he's also interesting to me in the sense that I've only seen him once or twice in person at press conferences. But, you know, after reading all about him and, you know, all the campaigns, all the think tanks he's funded, you know, how he really has his hands all over government. I was not expecting the kind of demeanor I saw from him. I was expecting sort of a very big talker. He responds to questions. He'll tell you things, but he's kind of soft spoken.
Keeping the discussion on budgets, but in a different way, education budgets. A lot of surprises this week in the state budget that is now law signed by the governor. One of them being enrollment growth, and it sounds a little complicated, but it's a big deal. I mean, the state has changed how it funds the growth in public school systems, and that could be especially in fast growing counties like Mecklenburg, that can be a really big deal.
Sure. So how it used to work is that growth was kind of automatically factored into the equation from year to year.
Like so, they just assumed, based on your rate of growth the past year, this is what we can at least assume you're going to have
this
year.
Yeah, districts come up with projected numbers, mm-hmm. and CMS in the past couple of years has added 3,000 new students each year because we're a growing county in the state. You know, some places are losing enrollment, but at the state as a whole, I mean, gaining, you know, several thousand students per year, I think 10,000 per year they're expected this year. So the idea is that you have these new students coming in. These students need new, you know, more teachers, more supplies. So there's all these complicated formulas about how you figure out how many new teachers, how many teaching assistants, and all that. But those, they would run the numbers, budgeters would run the numbers and figure out, okay, we need this much more in our budget to basically keep up with the growth. But next year will be the first year where that's no longer the case. So
how's it going to work?
Yeah. So basically, that money for growth will have to compete with a whole bunch of other things. So no longer will it sort of automatically be a budget line. It will have a lot of competition for that. Now,
so if they come and say, okay, Mecklenburg CMS says, okay, we have 2,000 students. We'll have an additional 2,000 students this year. And Gaston County is going to have an additional 250. Is there a chance that growth wouldn't be funded for CMS, but it would be for Gaston County, depending on who's in power and some legislator wanting to do more for their district?
I don't know if you could single out counties, but I mean, the worst case scenario is that lawmakers say, we don't want to fund growth. So class sizes would get bigger. The best case scenario is that it makes it hard for planning. And, you know, usually districts get an idea of how many new teachers they have to hire back in March, and then they can start the planning process. But now you got to wait till the budget is approved in, you know, July, hopefully. And then you got to, if you do get growth that's funded, it may take a little while to get that money to the district.
So lawmakers are going to be going through this on a case-by-case basis every summer then?
Basically, yes. But, you know, I was trying to talk to some lawmakers yesterday about it, and a lot of them had said that they didn't realize it was in the budget. But I was trying to get Representative Nelson Dollar. Couldn't get him yesterday. But
he was one of the writers.
He's one of the chief budget writers, yeah. And he told the News and Observer, though, that, hey, look, we're going to fund growth. We're still going to fund growth. That's not the question. But basically, our concern is that when, as in, you know, the past few years, you make projections for growth, and then it actually comes in lower, and then you have to take out money from the budget, and it looks like you're cutting the education budget when you're basically just holding things steady. This is a more transparent way.
Is that true? Has that happened?
Well, I've never heard people be confused about that. When I've looked at the budget, you know, there are minuses, but it says next to it, because projected enrollment is lower than expected.
Right. Well, I mean, there was accusations of that state lawmakers were cutting education last year with the whole teacher, with because they cut teacher assistants.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that what Dollar's talking about is this perception that they are cutting education? Of course, the big thing this year has been, you know, adding money for.
Well, there's always raises. Yeah. I mean, budgets are difficult, right? Especially school budgets, because you have more students. And so it is very difficult to figure out when you look at the whole education budget and you see, oh, OK, the number is bigger this year. So why is everyone saying they cut money when they're actually putting more money into education? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the answer is because there's more growth. You know,
there's more growth than they're funding.
Yeah.
So when is
no, there's it's growing because there's more growth. And so they're spending more money. But in other areas like teacher assistants, they may be cutting.
Yeah.
So one of the big concerns is, hey, from Heath Morrison, is we're not gonna get this money till it's too late. When did they get the money before? When was it decided that, hey, in the old system, they gave their projections and was it just assumed they would have that money it wasn't officially approved,
yeah,
but they knew they were getting it.
It was kind of assumed. So, I mean, because I asked, I said, well, you know, you still have cuts and mm-hmm. you still have a lot of surprises. So how is this any different? And they said, well, basically what we view, especially in the continuation budgets, is it's tweaks, so that it's likely that we will get this money. So in March, we can start selling, you know, running the numbers and telling districts, this is what you can expect.
Okay.
So, well, and, you know, the other part is that once you, I mean, I'm not saying that right now this is the concern, but once you make something up for debate, something that needs to be proactively approved to get that funding, that thing is no longer certain.
Right.
And we've seen that historically is true through any kind of government, is that something that was automatic, that's
and
no
that's
longer
a good
automatic.
Way to describe
CMS might
happening.
Have some
it's
program.
Up for, it's up for debate now, whereas it really wasn't as much before.
And so they cannot really be advertising or be hiring teachers till August or right about when school starts. And those then the best teachers are probably going to be having be hired somewhere else by then.
That's what Heath Morrison has said. You know, it's
and you do have classes that'll start out larger, which that does happen some now anyway.
And yeah, he is worried that the money won't come down until maybe November or something, and then you hire teachers there.
All right, guys, thanks a lot. Another one in the bag.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.